Fourth Estate Radio, Fourth Estate Radio, in 1 minute, Mark.
January 2006. I'm Gail Thomas. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that Hamas has rejected international calls to disarm or risk losing vital aid for the Palestinian Authority, suggesting it may look for sources of funding in the Arab world and beyond. This aid cannot be a sword over the heads of the Palestinian people and will not be material to blackmail our people, to blackmail Hamas and the resistance, senior Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh told Reuters. Hamas, which has sworn to destroy Israel, was committed to keeping its arms, he said. Haniyeh was speaking after the United States threatened to cut back its $234 million in aid earmarked for the Palestinians this year because Hamas was expected to form a new Palestinian government. The BBC reports the roof of a trade hall hosting at least 500 people in the southern Polish city of Katowice has collapsed, killing at least 20 people, officials say. The weight of snow on the building, which was housing a pigeon exhibition, was a possible cause, they added. At least 100 people were injured, and up to 100 may still be trapped amid freezing temperatures. Much of eastern and central Europe is in the grip of a severe cold snap with heavy snowfalls. The BBC reports that a US court-martial in Afghanistan has found an American soldier guilty of mistreating two prisoners at a military base in Uruzgan province. James R. Hayes was found guilty of one count of conspiracy to maltreat and two counts of maltreatment, a statement from the U.S. military in Kabul said. His punishment includes 4 months in prison in Kuwait. Another soldier faces a court-martial over the same incident, which took place last July. His trial is due to start on Monday. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that Australia and Indonesia are headed for a diplomatic crisis over the fate of 43 West Papuan asylum seekers, whose claims of persecution now appear likely to be recognised. In a first step towards granting them refugee status, immigration authorities have ruled them to be potential refugees after completing health, security and identity checks. The decision was made after intelligence officers interviewed them at length. They will now be formally interviewed and their claims processed, although a final determination on their status is not expected for months. It is believed they have been identified as genuine, high-profile, non-violent political activists, and that several also offered credible claims of torture and imprisonment. Among the group are unaccompanied children of Papuan activists unable to flee. In a sign of growing tension between Jakarta and Canberra, Indonesian President Sulistyo Bambang Yudhoyono last week urged Prime Minister John Howard to return them, saying they had no cause for asylum. He assured Mr. Howard they would not be persecuted. This has been Fourth Estate Radio News for the 28th of January 2006. I'm Gail Thomas.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. So this right-wing troll on a message board was trying to downplay Bush's illegal wiretapping by saying he found it funny that we're criticizing Bush for adhering to an idea that's one of the core beliefs of Democrats and liberal-minded governments around the world, the idea that the rights of society outweigh the rights of the individual. This is, of course, crapola. Yeah, liberals believe in the idea of a greater community, of being part of something larger than yourself, and of everyone's shared responsibility as citizens. And there are occasions when the greater needs of society are more important than individual needs. But this isn't one of those cases. No liberal I ever met has ever believed in allowing the government to do and get away with acts that are clearly illegal. What Mr. Bush and his administration are doing are, to my mind at least, clearly against both individual liberty and the liberty of society overall. It's an issue that ought to be bipartisan, but in this day and age, any issue can be turned into a partisan one. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I'm not sure what reason this troll had by instigating trouble. I'm not even gonna pretend I understand why they continue to support an administration that's among the most, if not the most, corrupt and incompetent administrations we've ever had. Maybe they don't see that what these people are doing is a threat to their liberties as well as mine. But it seemed pretty clear to me that, for this guy anyway, having a Republican president was more important than having an American one. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
This is Sansara Taylor. The world can't wait. Drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush will give his State of the Union address. But we already know that the state of this union is a state of emergency. The Bush regime is out to remake the world. Endless war, an Orwellian police state, religious tyranny, no dissent, no critical thought, no right to abortion, a ruined planet. This regime is immoral, it's unjust, and it's indictably criminal. We must stop it. On Tuesday, January 31st, when Bush gives his State of the Union address, protest across the country, demand Bush step down. The next Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C. to bring our demand right to the White House. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush must step down. Find us today. WorldCan'tWait.org, 866-973-4463.
Fourth Estate Radio.
Everybody, welcome aboard for another edition of Fourth Estate Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour. My name is John Fox in Sydney.
And I am Bruce Birch in North Carolina, and I'm just tickled to death to be back with you this week. John, how...
You're doing all right there, Bruce, are you?
I'm doing so great. It's got to get better. But, you know, John, I just wanted to ask you, what's been going on down under? I mean, I've been hearing all kinds of stuff. What's happening?
Well, I'll tell you. Well, yeah... We had Australia Day this week, which is kind of Australia's version. Well, not kind of. It is Independence Day, basically. It celebrates the day that Captain Cook landed at Botany Bay. Some people like to lovingly refer to it as Invasion Day. And I guess that kind of all depends on your point of view. But you'll remember the race riots here a few weeks back. There were rumblings that the neo-Nazis and whatnot were going to try and create some noise on the Australian Day of Pride, and thankfully nothing happened. There were a couple of lame attempts, but we have our first report from a great mate of mine, a guy with a journalistic history a mile long. His gentleman by the name of Brian Stokes from MachineGunKeyboard.com, and we'll be getting a bit of a report from him later.
Excellent, 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 excellent. Well, you know, Alito seems nearly assured for his seat, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah, but
maybe we'll talk about it now.
Yeah.
What was that, John?
Well, you're just saying he's virtually assured.
Is it Halloween? What was it called?
Well, you looked like you wanted to go somewhere else first. But, you know, I mean, just as we're getting ready to record this, Kerry's saying that he's making the moves for a filibuster. So,
well, he's saying he's – yeah, but, you know. He also said that he was going to count every vote in Ohio, too. Didn't he?
Well, you know, the right wing
I don't want to be the cynic here, but,
well,
you know.
Well, hey, man, hey, I'm usually the cynic, and I still am the cynic. However, you know, I had this opinion, and I'm not the only one that had the opinion that people like Fox News and CNN, their talking heads, were all saying that, you know, well, and they're not going to filibuster because it was just that planting the idea of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I
actually,
you know, we talked about this last week, and you and I were at a difference of opinion here. And I, you know, I was saying, you know, when we had Mary on, you know, keep hammering them.
Right.
You know, keep hammering at their conscience and say, you know, like Sansara's ad says for World Can't Wait, you know, when the democracy was being taken away, where were you? You know, and it was just too much of a choir from the right saying that they're not going to filibuster. It was like Bush won the election, you know.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, John, now that I'm thinking about it. But, you know, I wish they would. I wish, you know, you've heard on my show that, I mean, I say it all the time, that part of the problem is that they're not standing up. They're not saying what they need to say. They're not, you know, they're not being an opposition party. Now, so seeing Kerry say this and seeing Teddy Kennedy also come out in favor of this, and Dick Durbin as well, you know, is very heartening. But the problem is that we still have people like Harry Reid, the minority leader,
yeah,
and you know, a whole nother, you know, Robert Byrd, for instance.
Well,
Robert
Byrd, I wonder if there's been a little bit of leverage over you know, the mine disaster with him. You know, I don't know what could have gone there. You know, just because a guy might be the minority leader, too, does not mean that he is a good Democrat. I do not necessarily think that they go hand in hand at the moment. And what we're going to find out is who the real Democrats are, and they're going to stand up. And I'm thinking I'm going to relinquish my old title for Clinton when he kind of showed up during the last election to fire things up as Big Dog. And I think we should be giving that to Kennedy, because I actually am seeing him standing up. I mean, his performance during Alito's hearings was impressive, because he was not letting up on simple fact, on very simple fact, and he wasn't allowing them to, you know, say, oh, I didn't get that, and you can't tell me what I got. And he goes, well, I know what you got, because, you know, here it is. And I still think, and we talked about this off-air when we were doing in pre-production, that I still think that there's something in that family that understands democracy and realize that they are the anti-dynasty to the Bush family, if there is one. And even though they've been fairly decimated over the decades, they're still there.
Murdered.
They're still there, and Kennedy has still been reelected by his constituents over and over, and he has had a pretty good voting record. None of them are perfect. But I'm hoping that they're seeing that this is a moment that needs to be taken, you know. And I don't necessarily trust the mainstream media to give us the real story of what action they may be actually trying to take. So it's all a matter that I don't think, because we might have doubts, that we should throw up our hands, which is a problem that we've had in the past as opposition. We need to continue to hammer it even more, because this is the tipping point. It's going to go one way or another right now.
Yeah, and you know, but here's the other thing too, John. And later on in the show, we're going to have a lady by the name of Sansara Taylor, who is part of World Can't Wait at worldcantwait.net. And if you go to that website, you'll see that there is this organization that is very much geared up against the fascistic Bush regime. But this particular nomination, in my mind, really typifies he is like the face of fascism in the Bush regime.
Oh, absolutely.
If you look at his record, I mean, you know, we were talking about this last week. But I got to tell you, with this guy in place, the corner is turned.
Yeah.
And I don't see any real, you know, Kerry is standing up. Kennedy is standing up. Fantastic. That's wonderful.
Well, that needs to be the beginning of the swell, and it needs to get the rest of them to stand up.
There has to be 41 senators.
I think
to
they can
support
do it.
A filibuster.
Right.
60 senators can close the cloture vote, which is basically the vote that ends debate.
Right.
Okay. So without a vote to end the debate goes on endlessly, hence called a filibuster. So nobody actually stands up in the Senate and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks.
Right.
Okay. So it's basically the inability to get a cloture vote.
Right. Because basically, from what I'm getting the understanding of is we're not getting what we need out of the debate. So the debate's not over, people. And that's exactly what's going on. The guy has not been open with his views on landmark cases, things that deal with precedent, things that deal with executive authority. Yet he has been very vocal and very written about these things in the past, and everything has always been siding with big government, big corporations, and with strong executive power. And they even tried to throw this thing out that what's the bloody term that I'm looking for, Bruce? I can't think of it now. They tried to stick out there for a morning that that only meant that there's one president. Like there were
unitary executive.
That's it. A couple of right wingers came out and tried to redefine what that meant, as though to try and make it something completely innocuous. You know, that same thing about how the polls about the domestic spying, when they were worried about when they worded it towards spying on terrorists or spying domestically, completely skewed it one way or another.
Well, I hope it can happen. I don't think it's going to, though.
Well,
I'm just going to be honest with you.
Well,
I
agree.
My analysis.
I understand where you're coming from, Bruce. And I mean, I'm one of the biggest cynics that there is. But I also feel that the reason why we're seeing this much action over Alito is that people are seeing this for how important it really is. The right wing and the cabal are continuing to try and play their normal, you know, red herring games, trying to redefine, you know, terms, redefining conversation and all those things. But because I think we're actually coming to a head that now seriously is the time that we have to get on it in a big way to make sure that these guys continue to stand up, or else they're going to end up... Their spines are going to go liquid because no one's standing up behind them so that when they get shoved once, they can get back up again. But
we must all stand together, or we will most assuredly hang separately.
No doubt. So we're chatting at tomhartman.com, blogging at Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John, he's Bruce, and we'll be back right after this on Fourth Estate Radio.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head On with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin. No falafel. No oxycontin. just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day, head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
A Buzz Flash radio moment. Some of us disagree with the president. We think the Iraq war is a mess. We think vote suppression is a crime. We think tax cuts for the rich are a bad idea. We think business doesn't know best. And we think dissent is an American value. This country was born because people questioned authority. It's as American as apple pie.
For more information, visit BuzzFlash.com.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Place your hand on your heart. Measure the beats. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how long it takes to protect your child's life. 5 heartbeats. That's how long it takes to learn about the dangers of pesticides that could be found in your child's classroom. Asthma, lower IQ scores, and cancer have all been linked to prolonged exposure to these toxins. But if you knew there were toxin-free alternatives to pesticides, if you knew you had a voice regarding their use, if you knew you could take action that would make your child's classroom safe today, wouldn't you do something? In a heartbeat. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
I'm Brian Stokes of MGK Machine Gun Keyboard reporting for 4th Estate Radio News. Australia Day 2006 was peaceful despite the racist right-wing Australia First Party again making an appearance at Cronulla Beach. You may remember that Cronulla was the site of massive brawls and race riots back in December of 2005. Anti-terrorism laws were invoked in several Sydney-area beachside suburbs in the week following the Cronulla riots. Martial law conditions, including halts on alcohol sales and lockdowns of the affected suburbs, were implemented to restore order. Australia First and associated racist organizations like the Patriotic Youth League were on the scene in Cronulla back in December, handing out racist flyers and cold beer to the already drunken redneck mobs. The New South Wales police set up roadblocks to stop violent racists from starting more riots back in December. Under the leadership of Jim Salim, a longtime neo-Nazi and presently New South Wales Secretary for the Australia First Party, the racists once again tried to foment race hate yesterday at Cronulla Beach. The New South Wales police gets a nod for their highly professional crowd control at Cronulla yesterday. This ensured a safe and peaceful Australia Day celebration by ejecting Australia First members from the beach who tried to sell T-shirts with racist messages and who carried banners on standards which could have been used as weapons. Salim has been trying very hard to whitewash his own Arabic ethnic heritage. Salim has been instructing news organizations to pronounce his surname Salem and make him seem a little whiter in news reports, but all this does is further expose Salim's racist hypocrisy. Australia First Party members again at Cronulla yesterday handed out racist leaflets and stickers promoting their race hate website, specifically targeting 13 to 15-year-olds who came to the beach without their parents. Apparently, Australia First are trying to groom kids into becoming race haters themselves. Police ordered the leafletters to move off the beach and kept them from re-entering. Aussies are simply not buying into Australia First's message of intolerance and racial hatred. The proof was in the peaceful celebration of Australia's National Day of Pride. For 4th Estate Radio News, this is Brian Stokes of MGK Machine Gun Keyboard. Visit us at machinegunkeyboard.com.
And thank you, Brian, and welcome back, everybody. It's coming up on 24 past the hour, and this is Fourth Estate Radio. Hey, Bruce, what do you reckon about that?
That was pretty pretty cool story there.
Yeah,
thank you,
yeah.
Brian. That was fantastic. You know, we don't get that kind of news often from South America or from South America from Australia. We get it from South America because you know here we pay attention to the communists, right?
Of course.
The supposed communists down there. Oh, that's so evil. But in Australia, you guys really have a parallel track to the United States, isn't that right, John?
Yeah, definitely. And Brian has done a lot of work fighting this kind of thing over here. And aside from being a seasoned broadcaster himself, he is a tireless worker against hate over here. And if you want to check out some of what goes on down here, you can check out a place called fightdemback.org.au, and that's a New Zealand and Australian message board. And it basically deals with all these kind of race issues and whatnot that go on here in Australia. And they've done some great work in actually stopping recruitment of teenage kids into neo-Nazi groups. And you know, I mean, they've really gotten down and gotten on it and done some really great work. So they went down there just to keep an eye on things and go and take photos. And I you know, I asked Brian to bring a recorder. And so I actually have some I'm going to cut up some audio of some rednecks down there and what some of the stuff that they were trying to promote was. And I'll have that for
you
next week. Just to show you, it's where you say it's parallel. The idiocy and the ignorance is the severe parallel. You'll be blown away to listen to what these people actually can say about what being Australian is. It's just absolutely insane. But anyway, and that's not going to be the last.
It sounds similar to the president that we have in a way.
Yeah. And
but
we have the opposition to the state premier here in New South Wales has pretty much signed on with these people, and the guy should be hung out to dry for some of the things that he's been saying. And he's been basically looking for an arrest quota between the whites and the Lebanese somehow. And you know, he's playing the race card every single night. Doesn't matter what the subject is on the news. You know, the premier can be off at something about education, and then the opposition response is all about the race riot thing, when the premier has done a really, really great job, and together with the police, they've done an absolutely outstanding job of protecting and serving the people here.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, really, really, they have, and they should be applauded for their efforts and not, and have avoided not being pulled into the politics. Brian and I have you know, it's one of kind of our constant sidebar conversations is just they really have held it together. And the premier that we have is brand new. The last one stepped down because he was having such a bad run. So this guy's actually picked up a mess and done some good stuff. So anyway, we're going to be back in just a few minutes. Man, we got a lot coming up. We got some Sarah Taylor in just a little bit, and you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
A Buzzflash Radio Moment. During times of war, people like to feel that God is on their side. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I have to ask, which God is that? Which God supports war? If you're a Christian and you support a war, that's your choice, as it should be. You're endowed with a free will. But leave Christ out of it, all right? He never supported a war.
For more information, visit BuzzFlash.com.
Watched her mouth wide through the glass as the rain it flooded the underpass, and the light from the restaurant hit her face in a way made me wish that she would stay. And her makeup ran in a little black river over poison, years and loves with it. I'm a simple man, but I know this much: joy in a woman is as good as her touch. Joy in a woman is as good as her touch. I'm a faulted man, lied and I stole, and felt the heaviness of guilt and the loneliness I'm withholding. No good woman can't change all in this heart, blah blah. Hello, high water, it's a pretty good start. Hello, high water, it's a pretty good start to my rain. Rain won't wash this away, 'cause a storm won't rise. When you cut in the eye, came down this road with no. This way, no. Simple and small, days would pass and no one would call. But at night I'd lay and I'd pray that all that had brought me here might fall away. There's no rose petals scattered over this bed, no 50 red roses to lay down your head. Oh, for the time I wish that you said, come on home, man, home to my bed. Come on home, man, home to my rain. Rain won't wait.
this is Bruce Birch, and you're back with Fourth Estate Radio. It's about 35 minutes past the hour, and we're back. John, you still with me out there?
Of course I am.
Fantastic. You know, sometimes I never... I have to check and make sure, you know. I mean, you are 16 hours into my future, so it's like, you know, got to make sure. Wanted to talk about a couple of things starting off this segment. And the first thing is that there's a new poll. You know, these polls and polls and polls. There's polls, polls, polls. Polls everywhere. But this particular poll is sort of stands aside or stands out from the rest of the pack. And the reason why it does is because some of the numbers are kind of astounding to me. This was put out by CNN, USA Today. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, they're not doing polling in their retirement, I don't think.
They did some polling during their career, but it was a different kind of polling.
Really? It might be kind of lucrative for them. But CNN, USA Today, Gallup poll came out, and this is the poll. Let me just read this. A majority of Americans are more likely to vote for a candidate in November's congressional elections who opposes President Bush.
Woo!
And 58% consider his second term a failure so far.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Now, on the question of trustworthiness, fewer people believe Bush to be honest and trustworthy. 53% said they believe his administration deliberately misled the public about Iraq's purported weapons program before the U.S. invasion in 2003. Now, why that is a good thing? Because, you know, the truth has to come out. And, you know, the reality is that they've been living on lies for so long that finally these things are beginning to, you know, to have an impact.
I think there's a point where, you know, the person with even the worst cognitive dissonance, you know, has to start seeing the forest for the trees. And, you know, Katrina, I think, was the door being kicked open.
Yeah.
And now with Alito, it's, you know, the rooster's running full on into the hen house and running out with basket loads of eggs. And you know, we got to kick
a wedge. I would say the fox is,
but... Yeah, well, you know what I mean? The fox, whatever. You know, we're looking at, you know, the rooster's... Never mind.
Okay.
Something similar to what Bush is doing to the rest of us. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry for anything. I'm tired of it, Bruce.
I know.
But the thing is
I am too.
We're, you know, same before. Just because we're tired now doesn't mean that we can stop, because hopefully, you know, if we're starting to crack through to some of these people, because all we've ever been armed with is the facts.
That's
and
right.
The facts were pointing to something that was, you know, we might not have had all the answers, but it sure as hell wasn't looking like the truth that we were being told it was. And so,
I totally agree.
So, you know, this again was that thing, you know, we made the call last week when it said, you know, when I said, look, you know, not just progressives and Democrats, you know, we need Republicans who see this as a power grab. They need to stand up and, you know, how about taking their party back? You know, I would like to see good Republicans in politics, because if all we have is suddenly like a huge Democratic Party, it'll be just as prone to corruption as this Republican one is.
Sure, sure.
So,
well, just as a, you know, here is a perfect number ground to work from, okay?
Yeah.
64% said things in the United States have gotten worse in the past 5 years, while 28% said things have improved. So essentially, there is a supermajority, almost a supermajority, meaning a two-thirds majority, of people in the United States who believe that things have gotten worse.
Sorry about that. Continue.
That's fine. Play it again. I want to hear it one more time. I'm just playing. Okay.
I was intending to cue it up, not play it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Boris is absolutely right. My, that's a fantastic catastrophe you have there. Is it yours? That's great, man, because the truth is that, yes, every bit of this belongs to Bush. Now, 49, split evenly, 49% to 49% believe that Bush is not honest and is untrustworthy.
Untrustworthy.
And, you know, so, I mean, you know, the numbers are right there, black and white. The man is a failure.
Well, I mean, it just the only surprise that I see is that it's taken this long for the numbers to even reflect that, because I think if everyone really understood what was going on or decided to pay attention is probably a better way to put it, the numbers would be even, you know, more so. You know, the attacks on civil liberties are just incredible. Absolutely incredible. And another thing, you know, that I think kind of helps with the idea that hopefully this is the time where the good Democrats are going to stand up and the rest of them will finally, you know, get a solid backbone for a short period of time was Gore's speech last week. You know, I mean, he made a rallying cry, and that had to ring with his old, you know, cohorts. They had to be saying, you know, this guy's telling us we're not doing our gig.
Yep. But the other part of that too, John, is that the Republicans, on the Republican side, the conservative side, the reaction to that was such an immediate reaction and such a dark reaction that he really did strike a nerve. And what we're going to see out of that, I believe, here's my belief, is that what we're going to see out of that is a renewed campaign to completely shift the argument away from the legalities of what the president is doing and into justification.
They've started that game already. Oh yeah.
And yeah, which we talked about.
Well, yeah, but so. I mean that, you know, that they keep continually try and do it from different angles too, because it's really not working. You know, I really think you have a situation here where they are really trying to pump out a message that, you know, the guy's got, you know, Alito's got the support of the people, when the people are saying, I don't know about that.
We think
our representatives need to actually stand up and say, hey, the people say this, so we're going to vote with what the people say,
right,
which is what a representative democracy is supposed to be.
Supposed to be. I do want to shift a little bit, because I think this story ties into this one we just talked about.
Do tell.
And that is that the Hamas election. Now, how it ties in is this way. Now, Hamas, the landslide victory in the Palestinian elections completely shocked the world. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why it shocked the world is because now the prospects for Middle East peace is much shakier than perhaps before this election.
Well, I don't necessarily know that that's true. And why is it that things that seem to shock the rest of the world by what the media says never shock me?
I don't know, John. I think because, you know, you're an international terrorist with ties to gun runners. No, I don't know.
I'm really glad you brought this up, because I was on the phone earlier with a friend of mine here who's a writer, a sometimes writer for the Sydney Morning Herald. His name's Anthony Lowenstein, and you can get to him at anthonylowenstein.blogspot.com. But he has a book coming out in a few months which deals with Israel and Palestine. Okay, this is going to be a pretty explosive book when it comes in. But we were talking about this. And, you know, he was in agreement with me, and he says, you know, why should anyone be surprised? You know, and you know, that they won in a landslide. Because I said, you know, it's said many times over that one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist, right?
Exactly.
So now Hamas, okay, they're the most militant opposition party there. What says that they're not going to suddenly become moderate now that they're going to have a seat at the table that they haven't had a seat
right
at? Okay. So
right.
Israel's having the reaction that America always has in any kind of Middle Eastern election. Oh, we don't support the government because they didn't elect who we wanted. Well, it's not your bloody choice. And you know what? If you actually let them be led by the people of their choice, the dialogue might actually get somewhere.
Well, and the reason why I was bringing this up too, John, was just to underscore the fact that if things were going so well in the Middle East, why would a populace an entire nation of people elect the most militant section of those parties to power.
Hey, they're the only people that were protecting them, that actually were protecting them. And this is what Anthony was saying to me. You know, he says, look, they might be the most militant, but they were the only ones that were actually doing anything on the ground to try and protect the Palestinian people. So maybe this will be, if the Israelis and America can look past the fact that it's Hamas and realize that it's a huge part, the representative of a huge part of a population in an area of the world that's under strife, and maybe they might actually get a dialogue. So let's come back to this if we want. This is Fourth Estate Radio. We're back in just a couple minutes.
This is Mark Crispin Miller. The world can't wait to drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush will give his State of the Union address, but we can say right now that the Union is in a state of emergency. The Bush regime is out to remake the world. An Orwellian police state, endless war, religious tyranny, no dissent, no free thought, a ruined planet. This regime is immoral, unjust, unelected, and indictably criminal. And we must stop it. On Tuesday, January 31st, during Bush's State of the Union address, we will mount protests all across the country. We will demand that Bush step down. Then, on Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C., and we will bring our demand right to the White House. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush must step down. Find us today, worldcantwait.org.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. It's 9 minutes before the hour, and this is our Occupation Watch. Take it away, Bruce.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to Fourth Estate. This is our Occupation Watch, and the first thing that we always do in our Occupation Watch segment is give you the numbers, the rundown, the human cost of occupation. And since the war began, the United States has lost 2,236 soldiers. Since the mission accomplished speech, that's 2,099, and on the Iraqi side, again, anywhere from 100 to 150,000 people have died for George Bush's folly. The story that I want to talk to you about tonight, and that John and I will discuss with you tonight, is about Iran, because what we're seeing is a very sharp buildup of rhetoric and accusations from both sides on the whole nuclear situation there. And, you know, it's my belief that there's an exit strategy being developed, and that would be through Iran.
Well, everything that I keep hearing out of the administration regarding Iran, it just seems like I've seen this Brady Bunch episode before. You know, it's the same kind of cranking up, but yet, I mean, are they going to just get out of Iraq to move it all into Iran? I can't understand how this becomes an exit strategy, though.
Well, I think that if they can get the world behind the idea that they don't want to have Iran have nuclear weapons, I think that's going to be part of the situation. But I do want to, before we get too far into that idea, let me just quote this story, because this is Iran now. Okay. Now, Iran said Thursday it had information that the United States, Britain, and Israel had a role in two deadly military plane crashes in the last 2 months. Right. It was the latest accusation by Tehran against the West in their sharpening confrontation. A day earlier, Iran blamed the United States and Britain for two bombings this week that killed at least 9 people in southwestern Iran. The information we have says that the U.S., Britain, and Israel's intelligence agents intended to create insecurity in Iran, said the Interior Minister Mustafa Pormohammadi. He told reporters on the sidelines of a police seminar. He says, "Even my evaluation says that the crash of our C-130 and Falcon planes was done by their design or maybe electronic surveillance." Mm-hmm. Or interference, I'm sorry.
Wow.
And you know, who knows exactly,
well,
but...
Okay, so, again, are we going and doing bombing runs ahead of actually declaring what's not a war like we did with Iraq, where it, you know, I mean, we've now heard that Halliburton's already setting up shop, you know,
yeah.
Before we went
I'm
in.
I'm laughing, John, but, you know, the reason why I'm laughing is because... You're right. We have seen this sitcom before.
Well, yeah, and what makes it so hard, and when I was speaking with Anthony earlier, I was talking about this because we touched on Hamas, which, you know, you and I talked about before, and we were talking about Alito and all this. And meanwhile, while all this other stuff is going on, we're rattling sabers with Iran. And when we talked about this last week, and I still stand by this, I think that Iran has only stepped up the rhetoric because Bush started making stupid noise.
Yeah, and that's the evidence has borne that out. But we have people now who are not at all interested in doing diplomacy.
Right.
What they're interested they're interested in using the military as diplomacy now. We don't have standing out there as holding people's debt, because we're selling our debt off now to people like China, or countries like China, etc. So the only thing that we do have left is our military might at this point.
As a
bargaining chip.
Well, and that military might has been severely damaged in, one, its potency, and its reputation with what, you know, the administration has done in Iraq over the past couple of years. So I see it as a replay of the same thing, because their end game is getting at the natural resources. Because, you know, Gail, my partner, and I were talking about, you know, every major civilization has fallen when they have outlived their natural resources and end up having to go and conquer other people for theirs. And I think that that is one of the things that drives this. And it's, again, very Orwellian. You know, it's this continual war. You know, we're not at war with Iraq, and so are we suddenly going to slide into a war with Iran? You know, that whole, you know, constant war for constant peace kind of vibe. And I think that they're playing that out to script.
Absolutely. You know, and time will tell, but, you know, it just seems like, you know, the whole war on terror thing, that's just, I mean, it's a perpetual thing. There is no logical end to it, because just like the war on poverty and the war on drugs and the war on whatever else, if you're fighting a noun...
Well, the whole thing is, you're fighting a feeling. Now, you cannot fight terrorism. What you can do is look at the causes of the hatred that brings that terrorism to your doorstep.
And address the symptomology.
So anything that is a war on terrorists or terrorism, it's impossible. It's completely illogical. So it's all wasted energy, which, again, is siphoning off the treasury, disabling our democracy, all to keep that, you know, kind of idea of you know, sustainable growth thing going on, which we also know is a fallacy. So...
But we've got to be safe, John. We've got to be safe.
Oh, man. You know, we're not safer. We're almost broke. The Chinese are getting ready to sell off the American debt. It's all not a good-looking thing. So, you know, we got to take a break. We got a news break coming up. Cup of Joe coming up. And Bruce and I will see you at...
Sansara Taylor.
And Sansara Taylor with We the People on Fourth Estate Radio.
Twin soldiers and Nixon.
I love it when my president tells me to put food on my family. I just, you know, when he tells me to do that, I immediately, you know, we start having a food fight. So,
do you really?
It's great.
You and your
man.
Kids start throwing like Twinkies and stuff at each other?
No, more like, you know, mashed potatoes and stuff.
Oh,
like,
right,
stuff
right.
Sticks,
full on.
Sticks
oh, right
to the
on.
Wall, you know. But anyway, you know, and that should be a top story all by itself. You know, how did we elect such a moron?
We try to answer that and many more questions this week and last week on Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John Fox, one of your co-hosts. Bruce Birch will join me on Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, every week to try and strip the pants off the mainstream media. That's FourthEstateRadio.com.
There was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
Bio-diesel. It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel bank.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel in
into their tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
This is 4th Estate Radio News for the 28th of January 2006. I'm Gail Thomas. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that Hamas has rejected international calls to disarm or risk losing vital aid for the Palestinian Authority, suggesting it may look for sources of funding in the Arab world and beyond. This aid cannot be a sword over the heads of the Palestinian people and will not be material to blackmail our people, to blackmail Hamas and the resistance, senior Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh told Reuters. Hamas, which has sworn to destroy Israel, was committed to keeping its arms, he said. Haniyeh was speaking after the United States threatened to cut back its $234 million in aid earmarked for the Palestinians this year because Hamas was expected to form a new Palestinian government. The BBC reports the roof of a trade hall hosting at least 500 people in the southern Polish city of Katowice has collapsed, killing at least 20 people, officials say. The weight of snow on the building, which was housing a pigeon exhibition, was a possible cause, they added. At least 100 people were injured, and up to 100 may still be trapped amid freezing temperatures. Much of eastern and central Europe is in the grip of a severe cold snap with heavy snowfalls. The BBC reports that a US court-martial in Afghanistan has found an American soldier guilty of mistreating two prisoners at a military base in Uruzgan province. James R. Hayes was found guilty of one count of conspiracy to maltreat and two counts of maltreatment, a statement from the US military in Kabul said. His punishment includes 4 months in prison in Kuwait. Another soldier faces a court-martial over the same incident, which took place last July. His trial is due to start on Monday. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that Australia and Indonesia are headed for a diplomatic crisis over the fate of 43 West Papuan asylum seekers, whose claims of persecution now appear likely to be recognised. In a first step towards granting them refugee status, immigration authorities have ruled them to be potential refugees after completing health, security and identity checks. The decision was made after intelligence officers interviewed them at length. They will now be formally interviewed and their claims processed, although a final determination on their status is not expected for months. It is believed they have been identified as genuine, high-profile, non-violent political activists, and that several also offered credible claims of torture and imprisonment. Among the group are unaccompanied children of Papuan activists unable to flee. In a sign of growing tension between Jakarta and Canberra, Indonesian President Suharto Bambang Yudhoyono last week urged Prime Minister John Howard to return them, saying they had no cause for asylum. He assured Mr. Howard they would not be persecuted. This has been 4th Estate Radio News for the 28th of January 2006. I'm Gail Thomas.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Since so many people harp on me for being negative and only talking about how lousy things are, I thought I'd let people know about the good things that are happening. Because believe it or not, good things are happening. First, there's Al Gore, who continues to speak out on important issues in a way that's making him hard to ignore. Some are even calling on him to run for president again. Second, as I speak, Senator John Kerry, along with Senator Ted Kennedy and Minority Leader Harry Reid, are leading a filibuster to try to prevent Judge Sam Alito from sitting on the Supreme Court. Whether they can hold a filibuster or not remains to be seen, but I think it's significant that they're willing to stand up and fight for this. And then there's Governor Howard Dean, chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He was on the Today Show this week where host Katie Couric tried to push the Republican lie that Jack Abramoff gave money to Democrats. Dean would have none of it and stood his ground firmly. Gore, Kerry, and Dean have taken a lot of criticism for their election losses, but the truth is that every Democrat running for national office faces a huge uphill battle. Not only do they have to go up against a well-paid, well-oiled Republican propaganda machine, they also have to go up against the so-called professional media that's clearly against Democrats and liberals. Those are some pretty formidable obstacles. True, we still have a long way to go, but a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And I believe we're headed in the right direction. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
This is Sansara Taylor with The World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime. As the world is threatened with a darkness so great that villages shook, houses collapsed, torture dungeons are built and photos are snapped, where are you? As abortion is criminalized and women are shamed, as gays are demonized and immigrants are blamed, and the president lied and spied, where are you? As science is pulled under and religion is made law, as New Orleans is abandoned and the polar ice caps thaw, where are you? History is turning. We either get Bush's future or a future we fight for and forge ourselves. You are needed now. Tuesday, January 31st, during Bush's State of the Union address, protests across the country, we demand Bush step down. Then Saturday, February 4th, get to Washington, D.C. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush stepped down. Find us today. WorldCan'tWait.org. 866-973-4463.
Fourth Estate Radio.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and that means it's We the People. We the People as usual. And Bruce, who do we have as our guest this week?
Well, we are very, very privileged this week to have with us Sansara Taylor of World Can't Wait. Sansara was actually on our show, I want to say, back in end of November, first part of December, with a story about the Hampton University students that were punished for giving out a specific flyer there at Hampton University. But she's back with us tonight, and we're going to be talking about specifically more just about World Can't Wait. And Sansara, it's really, really, we're really grateful to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really glad to be back with you guys. Thank you.
Well, we're glad to have you. And, you know, before we get too going too far, I really wanted to just sort of like do a just so our listeners know more about what World Can't Wait is, how did this get started, and, you know, what are the underlying principles?
Well, essentially, you know, the World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime. We picked the name because it, in a nutshell, explains what we are. We are about driving out the Bush regime because we feel that the world cannot wait. And then the reasons for that, we have a lot of different reasons among us. We're a broad effort that involves, you know, lots of divergent views. Essentially, though, we say that the Bush regime is unaccountable, it is illegitimate, it's immoral, it is justifying torture. We have a whole, you know, in our call, we identify the justification of torture as official policy, the moves towards theocracy and towards denying women the right to control their own reproduction, the outrageous lies that were told to launch an unjust war on Iraq, and then the plans for more wars under the guise of the war on terror, the suppression of science in an era of global warming, and just the whipping up of, also the stripping away of people's rights and the roundups and detentions of wholesale communities of immigrants, particularly Asian Muslim, South Asian Muslim and Arab, but also beyond in terms of cracking down and criminalizing dissent. And then just whipping up a culture of intolerance, bigotry, and greed. And this whole direction, we feel that, you know, the Bush regime has taken all of these outrages to a whole new level and actually is setting out to remake the world very quickly in a fascist way, and it will affect the lives of millions and millions of people in this country and billions around the world for generations to come, and that we here, living in the United States, have a special responsibility for the actions of our own government, and we have to drive this regime out. And so that's our premise. We started probably back in, I think it was late June, the first time we really got out there was on the 4th of July, at a Live 8 concert. We started by writing our call, which, you know, you can find that at worldcantwait.net, and we put our call out that explains why we exist and what we aim to do, and we distributed it hand-to-hand. Volunteers around the country, we got out probably a million copies hand-to-hand, then we started forming chapters, and through the course of time, we organized massive protests, or at least beginning protests on November 2nd, to launch this movement to drive Bush out in over 70 cities. And we've grown since then, and we are aiming to challenge George Bush's State of the Union with massive political outpourings.
Okay.
To say, no, Bush, step down, you don't speak for us. So,
right.
You know, and at this point, just to give you a sense, and your listeners a sense, we've gotten the involvement of just a very impressive and broad grouping of people, everybody from, you know, Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon, who are very well known and beloved for their art, as well as their opinions, to Congress people, Maxine Waters, Cynthia McKinney, Major Owens, and just a breadth of politicians and of social activists and major intellectuals who have said, we are joining with this effort. It is time for us, the people, to stop waiting for somebody to come in and do this for us. The stakes of what this regime is doing to the planet are clear before everybody's eyes, and if we don't act now, great horrors will result, and they'll be locked into place, and that's unconscionable. So we're getting out in the streets, and we plan on driving this regime out of office.
Well, I'll tell you, Sansara, it's been really impressive, just as far as being someone that watches these kind of things, to see this this movement organization of yours absolutely just take off, almost like nothing that I've seen in a long time. And you know, it's got to be a combination of a lot of factors. You know, timing for one, your undying efforts for another. I mean, those are fairly well documented, but I think a lot of it has to do with the name that you've given it, World Can't Wait. I think that sums up where we stand at the moment with this administration that was selected and not elected, as we all know. And unfortunately, it's not just the Bush regime. I personally believe that this all dates back to Nixon, and that this is all kind of the end game from a very, very long and well thought out plan.
That's very interesting. You know, and like I said, there are different views among us. I've heard somebody say the other day, I heard somebody saying, look, you know, George Bush, he's not George Bush I's son. He's Ronald Reagan's son, you know,
yes.
and different people have, you know, politically speaking, different people have within our group. I've never heard anybody trace him back to Nixon quite that way. But
well, he's much more his mother's son than his father's son. I mean, that very, very biting, just kind of I can't come up with a word that's safe for radio, but attitude towards people other than himself. You know,
she really has demonstrated a disdain for the welfare of other human beings, and I think he shares that.
Yes.
But I actually think, you know, my own view on it is that it's traced more to there are large shifts and changes in the whole world. Before we came on air, we were talking about some of the trends towards, you know, fascistic parties in different parts of the world and fundamentalist religions in different parts of the world. And I just think that this world in the last generation has undergone this. Now I'm speaking for myself. This is not everybody's view in the organization, but I think it's undergone such massive changes, demographic changes, massive migrations. I mean, we just reached the point where for the first time in human history, you have more than half the world's population lives in or around urban areas.
Right.
And these are just huge changes in people's daily routines, their way of life, years and years of traditions and ways of understanding the world. There's been tremendous disruption and dislocation, and I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's complexity to it, but I actually think that the rise of a fanatical and an extremist and a fundamentalist presidency in this country that sort of has, you know, simple vengeful answers that it's feeding its population or sections of it, you know,
right,
to answer and deal with what's been in this country two very dislocative and disruptive changes to people's way of life.
Well,
I think
Sorry. What you're kind of leading to, I think, also come where the Reagan kind of connection comes from is, my particular generation. I've talked about this previously. You know, I graduated high school in the late 80s, so it was like really we were the first children of the Reagan Revolution, and we really had it hammered into our heads to not care, to not think, and there was definitely an active change in the education system. And I'm gathering that you're probably about 10 years younger than I, and it seems that there is a little bit more of an awakening amongst the population of your generation, whatever you want to call it, that seems to be more clued, and it's people of Bruce's and my generation and kind of that, I don't know, 8 years, that we were programmed, we were taught to not care, and we're seeing that, we're seeing the final result of it, where by not caring, we've let them do this to our system.
Well, I think, too, that the 80s, you know, culturally speaking, in the Reagan years, I think there was a concerted attempt to reverse some of the verdicts, and this has been going on since then, too, reverse some of the verdicts that were hard-fought and won, social verdicts, not just, you know, legal verdicts, although those as well, but social verdicts on questions of racism, on questions of women's equality, on questions of do the lives of people around the world matter as much as U.S. lives. These are some of the things that, you know, that a generation before you're talking about in the 60s, and then even through a large part of the 70s, these were things that were huge shifts in the U.S. cultural assumptions because of the resistance that people had waged. And I think that the 80s, you saw a big backlash against that among, you know, people who were the Reagan types, who were very consciously trying to, you know, reverse those verdicts. I think that had an effect. Everybody I know who grew up in the 80s and came of age during the 80s says, oh my God, that was a terrible decade, you know. And I think that the 90s were coming out of that. I mean, I don't have a whole analysis of every step along the way, but
okay.
I do think that
hold that thought right there, because we're just out of time. We're with Sansara Terrell from World Can't Wait, and this is Fourth Estate Radio. We'll be back in just a second.
And pays with his soul for some crime did not commit. We think we're safe at home with our bumper stickers saying, just say no. We give up a few freedoms here and there in the name of a squeaky clean America. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Screaming for blood and justice. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Screaming for blood and justice. They show us the faces of hatred over and over. A new one every week. Could be Manuel Noriega. Could be the Ayatollah. Any old scapegoat will do. The young man would be our sacrificial.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no Oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Hello, Mrs. Johnson. Let's see. Before we close on your mortgage loan,
I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hello.
And as you know, he's African-American like you, so you can trust him.
And that's important, because here's the low monthly payment and interest rate you were promised, and here's where it triples. Plus, we buried a balloon payment in there, so you'll need another loan just to pay that off.
Another loan?
But we'll keep giving you loans.
Until we eventually take all the equity you had in your house, leaving you with absolutely nothing.
What? But don't worry. We're going to sell you credit life insurance. You don't really need it, but we sell it at 5 times the cost.
Which puts a ton of cash in our pockets.
Wait, whoa. Don't get up. You look nervous.
Ooh, we better hurry up and get you to sign. Or if you don't, I can pretend to ruin your credit with one phone call.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Member of the company family, like your employee ID badge. Your ID badge allows you admittance to secure, high-level areas such as programming or bun preparation. Given only to trusted employees, it ensures no non-employee or riffraff, such as panhandlers or marketing persons, ever set foot onto company property. Your ID badge shows that you actually do have a name and perhaps a face. And you're not just some anonymous cog in the great, empty, hope-sapping, soul-crushing industrial abyss. And what a face! Why, that photo on your ID badge is almost as flattering as the one on your driver's license. Laminated and often hung on a chained noose around the neck, you'll be flashing it for years and years and years and years. Proudly flashing your ID badge.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together.
All right, this is Bruce Birch back with you with for Fourth Estate Radio. And on the phone, on the line with us, we have Sansara Taylor of World Can't Wait. It is 21 minutes past the hour, and we're going to do the second half of this We the People segment. But what we want to talk about to get going here is the upcoming events surrounding the State of the Union address by President Bunny Pants. Sansara, could you tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that's going on?
Yeah, we have planned nationwide to have outpourings in cities and small towns right simultaneously as George Bush starts to lie to the country and to the world during his State of the Union, which we're calling the State of Emergency because that's what we feel we're at.
Okay.
We're having people gather in New York, San Francisco, L.A., Chicago, and many other places, Atlanta, around the country, and people will make noise, and they will drown him out. Pots and pans, they'll scream and yell, they'll bring their musical instruments, people can bring their boomboxes, whatever you want to do. Come on out and make noise, and let the world know, and go on record that, no, he doesn't speak for us. And the demand is very simple. It's just Bush, step down, and take your program with you. And then the following Saturday, we're bringing people to Washington, D.C., and we're bringing this demand right to the White House, to the seat of government, because that's where you have to go if you want regime change. We saw that in the Ukraine and in Argentina and other places. You go to the Capitol and you bring people there and you say, no, Bush, step down. And this is our plan, because here we are, and here's the critical thing I think that people need to, that motivates us and that people need to understand, is that there's a lot that Bush has done which is just absolutely criminal and outrageous, but it's before the country right now. The NSA spying has been revealed. It's being debated. Al Gore has come out and said, look, this is, persistent law breaking. He basically says there's not going to be a pendulum swing back. This is a permanent change, if we allow it to be unchecked. There's the Katrina is back in the public eye, which is a ongoing rolling disaster and betrayal of the victims. There's the Alito nomination, which has everything to do with again, the unbridled executive power of George Bush, and with gutting women's freedoms and returning us to domestic slavery and reproductive slavery. And I think all of this is coming to a head, and it's before the public right now. But if Bush is allowed to stand before the country and the world and deliver his State of the Union unchallenged, then all he has to do is, you know, he gets the platform, he resets the political discourse. He doesn't even have to justify what he's done. He just has to turn the page and change the agenda. And all of this momentum and outrage that people feel now, it gets pushed to the side, it gets marginalized, and all of these programs, the spying, the lying, the torture, Alito, all of this gets legitimized. It gets ratified simply because, you know...
By default, yeah.
Don't resist it publicly. Yeah. If you don't go on record in a way that cannot be denied or covered up, and Bush can't claim it, you know, to speak for all of us, then he will claim that. And it'll be more initiative to him, will be a big step closer to fascism. And so we're demanding and we're calling on people, this is the time, throw in, you know, get, they're not going to police themselves, it's on us. We have to organize, we have to motivate people, we have to talk to people, struggle with them and get out in the streets. I know that this is a, you know, it's a frightening regime. But you have to be in the streets because history is being decided one way or the other.
Well, isn't it only frightening because they've tried to make us scared? Because actually, I think that if enough noise gets made, and Randy Rhodes was talking about this, and I think it'd be a great idea during the State of the Union address, I think the Democrats should all turn their back on him while everyone is making noise. Show to the world that the public actually doesn't go for this, because it's not that we're trying to avoid fascism. I actually think we're there.
Well, I think we're very close. I think we're very, very close. And I think it would be great if the Democrats would turn their backs. This is a moment when people need to act, and they need to go on record, and they need to do it publicly and collectively and massively with a simple demand, Bush step down. And part of it is, you know, I think that the regime is terrifying on the one hand because it's vulnerable, and that, you know, it's vicious because it's vulnerable, because they know that they do not have the popular support of the people. They know that they are doing things. I mean, they change the rules every time they get caught. They use it as an excuse to grab more power.
You're absolutely
and
right.
And that's a dynamic that only works as long as it's working.
Yeah.
Now, but here's the problem. And when it starts to unravel, it creates more problems for them, you know. But here's the thing is that it doesn't go on forever that you're encroaching upon fascism. At a certain point, it gets locked into place. And I think that, you know, we are, I would say we're not quite in fascism yet. We're very close. I don't want to split hairs here, but I actually think that what it takes is that right now there's a mood of people where people still want to fight this. And if we can galvanize that and step out, and that's what we are positioned to do, then I think we have a chance of breaking this back open. If we don't, if these protests are not massive enough, and if, you know, and this is a call to listeners to get involved, then we lose this moment of this initiative. And one of the big things that they have left to do is to quell opposition.
Righto. Well, thank you, Sansara. We have to get out of here. We're right up against it. That's worldcan'twait.net. And let's see what we can do about this on the night of the speech. We'll be back in just after this break on Fourth Estate Radio.
Thanks a lot.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
must be some kind of way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. It's too much confusion, and I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, plow and dig my earth. None of them along the line know what any of it's worth. No reason to get excited. A joke. But you and I, we've been through all that, and this is not our fate. So let us not talk falsely now. The hour is getting late.
The granola Ayatollah of canola, Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told me that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to 4thEstateRadio.com. That's 4thEstateRadio.com.
Oh no, why did we have to go? Bush keeps on lying, children keep on dying. Please, please, can't we pack and leave?
Yes, welcome back, everybody, to Fourth Estate Radio, and thank you so much for to Sansara Taylor, who we ran out of time to even say goodbye to properly, and Bruce, that was awesome. She's always just such a great energy to have on the show, isn't she?
Isn't she the best? She's just fantastic. Energy personified, that lady is.
You said she even had like her own little group of teenage admirers. Is that one of the things that you went to? It seemed like some of the teenage kids seemed to really. But I mean, what a person to, you know, to kind of idolize. You know,
sure.
I think she's something special. But anyway, tell us about
what we're
dealing with, man. It's where are we? Oh, we're at the Axis.
We're in our Axis of Iniquity segment, John, and actually, you know, there's a signpost up ahead.
Yes.
You've entered the Axis of Iniquity zone. just very quickly, out of the United Kingdom, I think it's a very interesting story. Britain is about to deploy 6,000 troops to Afghanistan over the next few months in the biggest and most hazardous military operation since the invasion of Iraq. Now, what they're going to be doing in Afghanistan is, number one, to thwart the Taliban, according to the defense secretary, and number two, they're going to be based in the heart of the opium poppy area to try to stem the flow of the illegal opium trade.
George Bush's poppy crop, right.
Right. So, and we were talking about this at one point, John, I think about, I don't know, a month ago.
Yeah.
Where what we did was, you know, what the United States did was leave Afghanistan to the back to the Taliban.
Well, actually, it actually went back to the warlords, really, because when the Taliban actually had control of the place, we might not have liked a lot of what they were doing. However, they had brought the poppy crop down to virtually nothing. They had virtually eradicated it. And so then after we went in and left the place with basically no security system, the farmers are making their money off the warlords, and they now have a booming poppy crop, which has now brought heroin more pure than ever known to New York City.
Oh, joy.
So, I mean, you want to talk about a war on drugs, hey, you can look straight there. You got to, you know, you're seeing for the first time a real heroin problem in America, more like we've had in, you know, leveling what we have here in Australia. But that's due to proximity.
Yeah.
And, you know, it used to be that it just used to be garbage that finally got out there because it was limited. But now, man, it's free-flowing. You know, I've seen some news pieces down here, man. It's just amazing. You know, it's just open. The harvesting of the poppies is just open and free.
Well, and I think it's a testament to the fact that it got left there. But you know what, John? The other part of that, too, is that this illegal drug trade also provides a tremendous amount of money to go into somebody's coffers. Now, I wonder who that is.
Yeah. That would be those insurgents we constantly hear about. You know,
do you think so?
Oh, that's exactly it. And in fact, the Taliban, in fact, we did report this a couple of weeks ago. The Taliban were now turning around and going to use the poppy crop money to fund their resistance.
Which is actually very interesting because they were the ones who had actually clamped down and had a tight control on opium poppy production throughout the entire time they were in power.
Yeah.
So you didn't see this huge exportation of heroin or of raw opium poppies.
Yeah, because, so, I mean, by the time it got to the United States back in the 70s and through the 80s, from what I understand, you know, it was so cut and full of, you know, garbage other than what it's supposed to be. It was, you know, it basically wasn't heroin, and you had a lot more trouble getting a real addict. You know, as opposed to the stuff, you know, I mean, we have, you know, as much of a heroin problem as any other country does that's honest about it. And the Australians, thankfully, here in New South Wales, have an injecting room and everything that they set up last year, and it's still an ongoing trial. And so far, it has been coming up with really great results, no matter how much the right wing would like to try and spin it otherwise. It has taken it off the street, and it has helped get people into treatment. So, you know.
So it's a harm reduction strategy kind of thing.
Yes, and you know, I mentioned the state government that bowed out here not long ago. To their defense on that issue, they really, really pushed hard and said, look, we know no system is going to be perfect, but we're not going to figure out what the right system is until we try one. And unfortunately, they really blew it and were corrupt in other ways and bowed out. And I think it was good that that Carr bowed down as the premier, because this new guy, who I didn't know from a hole in the wall before he was appointed to be, you know, party leader in the state parliament. This guy has been one of the most balanced and thoughtful politicians I've seen in years. You know, I mean, he's actually gotten out there. He has had, you know, he's tried to be apolitical when apolitical is the thing to be doing, you know, and he knew that, you know, most people that would come in after, you know, someone bows out after a not so graceful performance usually ends up with a lot of baggage. Somehow this guy, I actually think he could do something strange and actually possibly win his next election, which I think would be amazing.
So what else has been happening down under there, John?
We
touched on what's happening here, what's going on there?
Last week I had my big tirade about the Australian Wheat Board and the Iraqi Oil for Food Program. And I reckon because it was Australia Day here, you know, over this week, which is the Australian National Birthday, I don't think that there didn't seem to be any news coming out. So I don't think there were actually any hearings on the issue. So that is still... a work in progress. But just to let you in on a little Australian trivia, Australia Day is like, you know, the American 4th of July, and, you know, basically it's a day out at the beach, and you know, most Australians yesterday were doing their national duty by either going to the beach or going to the pub and playing legally, the only day a year you can do this, play a game called Two Up. It's a gambling game that supposedly dates back to the original settlers, and it was deemed illegal because it was kind of like, you know, you know, the card sharky games like in New York. But we'll have a link on the blog, so if you ever want to try and play it, and it takes basically a piece of wood and two single coins. And so what you would have seen around here in Australia would be a bunch of people at the pub drinking beer and playing with sticks of wood and pennies and throwing money down. So that was the basics of the Australian national holiday, and thankfully, the Nazis weren't able to stir up any, you know, nonsense and ruin it, and it seemed to go off without a hitch. And they also announced the Australian of the Year on Australia Day, which is, you know, someone who, you know, has been a great export for Australia to the rest of the world. And finally, for the first time in quite a few years in my memory, the scientist who found a vaccination of some sort for cervical cancer was given it for the first time. We didn't have a sports star like a cricketer or a tennis star getting it. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but there's so many more important things, and it seemed like Australia was always sticking, you know, whoever the current cricket captain was up. You know, and it's fine, and I think that there are times for that. You know, Bradman, who's probably like the greatest cricketer in all in history, from what I understand internationally. Yeah, there's there's an instance, but you know, not in this situation. You know, Nicole Kidman got a nod of some sort. They do it in different categories and whatnot. So that was really good. And the guy's going to turn around and use his grant to try and get backing to develop this thing, which supposedly is a cure for cervical cancer.
That's great.
So
that's good.
There's a lot
that's
of stuff
good.
That comes out of this place. It's a teeny little place that, like, you know, it's a little island in the middle of nowhere. But man, there's a lot of science that goes on down here. A lot of science, and it's a good thing. I'd never really realized it, that there's so much work in biomedical engineering and all that kind of thing that goes on just like bloody right up the road from my house. So,
wow.
You know, so it was kind of a slow news week here, aside from the fact that pretty much, you know, Australians are pretty relaxed kind of sort of people most of the time, you know, except when things get ridiculous. And most of Australia was just kicking back yesterday, having a barbie, having a bit of beer, trying not to get too much sun, and, you know, be proud of being Australian. And I think it went off, and I think, you know, aside from one minor incident, I think it went off without a hitch, and it was good.
Well, that's
so
fantastic.
We got about a minute and a half left here, man. Did you have anything else you needed to throw in?
Well, I just wanted to mention this because I thought this was just a freaking amazing. Here's an indicator that the economy is going great in the United States. Okay.
Yeah.
Chicago City Council approved the opening of a Walmart. 24,500 Chicagoans applied for 325 jobs at this Walmart.
Oh, my God.
Friday. Yes.
Man, there's something wrong when you have the masses there clawing at each other for peasant wages to work for the most destructive employer in the country.
I read that and I just thought that this is the common thread, you know?
Just like this lyric says, so there's a bullet for everyone.
yeah. That's
right.
You,
man, it's been a it's just been a huge week, and I think the push needs to continue on this Alito thing. I know it's frustrating, but we got to hold on to this, and we'll be back to wrap this edition of Fourth Estate Radio up in just a second. And we're blogging on Fourth Estate Radio and chatting at the Tom Hartman chat room. And you're with Bruce and John on Fourth Estate Radio.
And they say there's no provisions, it's not enough to go around. But when it comes to the gun, there's a bullet for everyone.
This is Mark Crispin Miller. The world can't wait to drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush gives his State of the Union address. But we can say right now that this union is in a state of emergency. The Bush regime is not conservative. The Bush regime is not American. The Bush regime is radically opposed to the ideals on which America was founded. Reason, free speech, democracy, and the pursuit of happiness. The Bush regime wants to replace all that with corporate domination and religious tyranny. They want a vast police state where there is no argument, no private pleasure, no free thought, and not a single tree left standing. This regime is immoral, unjust, unelected, and indictably criminal, and we must stop it. Tuesday, January 31st, during Bush's State of the Union address, we will protest all across the country and demand that Bush step down. The next Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C., where we'll bring our demands right to the White House. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush stepped down. Find us today. WorldCan'tWait.org, 866-973-4463.
You
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Well, this one takes the cake. Arlen Specter likes to swing both ways, politically, when it comes to media blather. So it's little surprise that he voted for Alito on the famous premise that he could help influence Alito not to overturn Roe v. Wade. Okay, stop laughing now. He actually said that, really. I mean, Specter got to be chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee by promising the Bushvicks that he would occasionally talk liberal to keep his Philadelphia stronghold happy, but he would ultimately deliver for the Bush Politburo. And that he proved with the Alito nomination, running the hearings on time and on script, down to a gratuitous lie to Ted Kennedy and the infamous on-cue tearful exit of Mrs. Alito. Aw. Specter now is promising that he will hold hearings on Bush's wiretapping. It's really nothing other than a carrot to keep Democrats from filibustering Alito. Specter has already said that he didn't think Bush broke the law, but certainly if he did, it might be impeachable. But since he didn't, there's nothing for Bush to worry about. That's the essence of Specter's convoluted, hypocritical, have-it-both-ways stance. Specter is just a creepy Republican Northeast version of the unctuous Orrin Hatch. He doesn't even have an independent bone in his body, except when it comes to posturing for the Pennsylvania press. The Bushevics would have never allowed Specter to chair the Judiciary Committee if he didn't sign a loyalty oath. Of course, to be loyal to the Bushevics means you support breaking the law, which makes it hypocritical to be the head of the Senate committee that oversees issues of justice. For that reason, Snarlin' Arlen more than merits being named this week's GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com? So many Republican hypocrites. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
Please tell me the reason behind the colors that you fly. Love just one nation. And the whole world.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. It's 9 minutes before the hour, and we're almost out of here, Bruce. I think we should do the credits, buddy. First of all, big thank you to Sansara Taylor for coming up and talking to us as only she can, and you know, what she's spearheading for the night of Bush's address is great. Yes, and I'd love to see the Democrats stand up and turn their back on it.
I challenge everyone who's hearing this to get out and go to worldcantwait.net and check and see if there's anything local that you can get in touch with a local group.
Hey,
between
you can start
now
your own.
Tuesday,
if there's not a local one, can't you?
That's right.
You know, start your own. And it doesn't matter even if it's five people. If it's your town, go and take it.
Do it. Absolutely do it. And then mobilize to go to D.C. on the 4th, which is a week from today. Go to D.C. on the 4th and encircle the White House and let Mr. Bush know that you don't think that he is the leader of the people.
Well, we know he's illegitimate, and it's now time to take an illegitimate president out of office. You know, and get
legally and peacefully.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know what? I tell you what, legally, I'm not sure if it's going to be completely peaceful. And that's only because it may come to that. I worry at times, wondering, you know, if it's gone so far that it could get fairly ugly. But anyway.
Well, I believe in the legal and peaceful means.
Oh,
myself,
I do too. But when I say peaceful, I'm not saying about being, you know, aggressively violent. But I'm not saying that, you know, when people in power who have done everything possible to stay in power suddenly have that power being threatened to be taken away, can sometimes do some pretty extreme things. And so what I'm worried about is that people will get hurt in the process of getting it back.
Well, there have been so many people that have been hurt thus far.
Exactly.
You know, I would say let their sacrifices not be made in vain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to leave the show. I don't want us to leave this on a bad note or on a sour note.
No, we're not. But you know, seriously, our theme music really, really applies now more than ever. You know, the time has come today that, you know, everyone needs to stand up that gets it. And more and more, more and more people are getting it every day. And the thing is, until we stand up and take control back, as in meaning we the people, from these, you know, corporate neo-fascist, you know, zombie brigade, whatever, you know, it it always stands the chance of being dangerous. Because right now it is dangerous. I mean, the situation that we're in is like just in so many ways. You know, the saber rattling that we have, the, you know, you have an account, you have a treasury that's been plundered, a debt owned by the Chinese, and they're getting ready to sell off their dollars, you know, and all these things, you know, like I'm really, really worried, again, that America could be heading into a depression that makes the Great Depression look like a walk in the park.
I think it could happen. I think it could happen a lot quicker than people realize, with gold up around 500 an ounce or more.
And that's that thing, like I was saying about the using up of resources, right? It's going to come to that point where maybe the only thing that's going to stop it is that the machine gets shut down. And hopefully now all the politicians will stand up and actually shut the machine down on them before it goes into full self-destruct. So before we get out of here, we got to thank Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. He handles our stream and our archives. He never sends a bill, so give him a donation. Cup of Joe for his report. Brian Stokes for his report from Sydney, and we'll be getting a lot more from him in the future. Bruce, who else you got? We got about 35 seconds.
All Things Reconsidered tomorrow night, 10 o'clock.
That's right, man. You still doing 3 hours this week?
3 hours.
3 hours, man. You're filling in for Werby once again, filling in the airtime. Everybody, thanks for being with us this week. It's gone by quickly. I can't believe it. We'll see you next week. We're still working on that big news regarding this show. There's big news still yet to come, people. So say g'day, Bruce.
G'day, Bruce.
Right on. Thanks again, everybody, for being with us for another rendition. We will see you next week. Watch your back. The time has come today to take back your democracy. Good night. Good night, Bruce.
Good night, John.
Ready, damn ready to question authority. So damn ready that you're willing to defy authority.
Well, goodbye. And don't think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
You know, I love it when my president tells me to put food on my family. I just, you know, when he tells me to do that, I immediately, you know, we start having a food fight. So,
do you really?
It's great,
you and your
man.
Kids start throwing like Twinkies and stuff at each other?
No, more like, you know, mashed potatoes and stuff.
Oh, right,
stuff
right.
Sticks,
pull on.
Sticks
oh, right
to the
on.
Wall, you know. But anyway, you know, and that should be a top story all by itself. You know, how did we elect such a moron?
We try to answer that and many more questions this week and last week on Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John Fox, one of your co-hosts. Bruce Birch will join me on Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, every week to try and strip the pants off the mainstream media. That's FourthEstateRadio.com.